What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
97.1 FM Talk.
On demand audio.
Aw, man, I played a bite from Carolyn at the briefing, but I forgot to play this one.
Andrew Bailey is extremely qualified. As you know, he's been serving with honor as the Attorney General of Missouri, and he's been brought on as another set of very credible and experienced hands to work alongside the current Deputy Director, Dan Bongino, under the leadership of the Director, Kash Patel, and the Attorney General, Pam Bondi. When you're actually working and enforcing law and order, you need all hands on deck, and so we look forward to welcoming Andrew Bailey to this new post.
And we might get his replacement as AG Catherine Hanaway on the air before this show is over this afternoon. A lot of the questions this morning with Carolyn had to do with the Ukraine-Russia situation, security guarantees in particular.
The president has definitively stated U.S. boots will not be on the ground in Ukraine, but we can certainly help in the coordination and perhaps provide other means of security guarantees to our European allies. The president understands security guarantees are crucially important to ensure a lasting peace, and he has directed his national security team to coordinate with our friends in Europe and also to continue to cooperate and discuss these matters with Ukraine and Russia as well.
So she had to address the media coverage because the legacy media is just waiting for this to fail, right?
All weekend following those historic U.S.-Russia bilateral talks, we listened to clueless pundits on television trying but failing to claim that the president had failed. The so-called experts in the foreign policy establishment, whose record is nothing but endless wars, trillions of wasted taxpayer dollars, and dead Americans, have the nerve to try and lecture President Trump, who has solved seven global conflicts in 7 months, about peace.
Carolyn, fired up about that one. There's no doubt about it. Now, I've been concerned about this conflict from the beginning for a variety of reasons. I just didn't think that this was a winnable war for Ukraine. Those circumstances may have changed, and obviously this is very nuanced. Amir Hadzik is back with us. He's retired Marine Corps Regional Area Specialist. He was an infantry unit leader in Afghanistan and an Iraq combat veteran. How are you, Amir? Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, Mark. Great to hear you on the air, my friend.
I appreciate that. Give me a little, and the listeners, a little background, because some of this for you is certainly personal. You know this region very well. You deployed to Georgia way back in 2008 during their war with Russia, didn't you?
Yes, that's exactly right. Back in 2008, July, and you know, I learned a great thing about the region, about the whole, you know, Eurasian area right there, which kind of set me on trajectory to finish up as a regional expert, you know, in the Marine Corps prior to my retirement. And I kept paying attention to what's going on over there because, you know, my life has been shaped with war in Bosnia, where I'm originally from. And the whole breakup of Yugoslavia, which is sort of like a breakup of Soviet Union but miniaturized.
Yeah.
And I found a lot of parallels between wars that Russia has been involved with its neighbors and what Serbia was doing in Balkans back in the 90s. Except, you know, the Russian and Ukraine thing is like 10 times larger because
yeah.
we have nuclear weapons involved and just sheer numbers are 10 times larger. So I'm really paying attention with keen eye to what's happening here to see what kind of scenario is going to work out with the peace agreement. Because, you see, when war between Croatia and Serbia finished, Croatia was allowed to liberate all of its Serb-controlled territory, regardless of Serbian minority living there. Where Bosnia was not. Bosnia was sort of like a frozen conflict where you have like a Serbian part and then you have like the you know, Catholic and Muslim part, and so that conflict is still frozen. So I'm really paying attention to what's going on in Ukraine, and I'm hoping the whole time I was rooting for a Croatian scenario where Ukrainians will be allowed to defend themselves and reclaim lost territory, rather than Bosnia scenario where it's simply going to be frozen conflict. Yes, people will stop dying, but for how long? For how long and to whose advantage?
Yeah, and
because, as you can see in Georgia,
Well, I was going to say, Putin's not going to go back in. There doesn't seem to be any allowance right now to give back the region that's been seized. In fact, he wants, I think, a little bit more for this to work. And then I guess the question would be, first of all, can you trust Putin? And is this something that Zelensky can come back and he can sell to the Ukrainian people? One of the things, and I mentioned this, we're going to talk with Senator Talent about this after 5 o'clock, these, you know, the security guarantees which are being discussed. My question, I'd love your opinion on this, because much of the guarantees are kind of framed around what a NATO member might be afforded in and of themselves, right? They're Ukraine, not a NATO member, but they're talking about if in fact something would happen in the future that you would still have the full force of NATO getting involved here. So when you hear security guarantees, do you think it's something that Putin is serious about? And then how does Zelensky sell this to his people and get out of this whole thing to end this war?
Oh, you're absolutely correct. And I mean, if he doesn't sell his people this settlement, you know, he might just get forced out of the office, just like his predecessor. And so that's why it's so dangerous. But as far as, like, these guarantees, I mean, yeah, they're talking about Article 5 style guarantees, like an attack on Ukraine would be, like, attack on all of the guarantors. But
right.
Who are the guarantors? Like, are we talking about UK and actual NATO members, or are we talking about Belarus or Armenia or, you know, CSCO members, you know, or Russian allies? But there are some kind of concrete security guarantees, one of which is that $100 billion of U.S. weapons and ammunition being sent to Ukraine via European nations. And also, I understand that recently at the White House summit, President Zelensky and President Trump were talking about $50 billion Ukraine and the U.S. bilateral drone program, because Ukrainians have shown us just how automated war has become, you know, in this modern era. And I think that will be really good for the U.S. military, especially since I'm planning on having at least one of my kids go into U.S. military sometime soon.
So what are you, because again, I'm going to go back to my, you know, my comments from the beginning where I just saw, and I think a lot of people in this country, and this was discussed a lot last year during the presidential race, pouring a bunch of money into an effort for Ukraine where they don't appear to have the possibility of winning, seemed like a big waste of money. And by the way, it wasn't all cash. It was weapons, and we've sent support. But in this situation currently, it doesn't seem like either side can really win this unless there is some sort of agreement that is reached. What would your level of confidence be? Because mine would be very low, only from this perspective. I've covered conflicts across the globe for 40 years now. There's ceasefires. When you have a ceasefire, I think President Trump even alluded to this, then the ceasefire is broken. So he's talking about it in terms more of a concrete peace deal. But can Putin, because I think that Zelensky, if he sells it to his people, I think that he can abide by whatever the agreement might be. It would be Putin that would be the big question mark here, but there are economic implications here. He's losing a lot of, you know, young people, and that's got to not be popular in Russia. So does he feel somewhat pressured to do something here? But he can't come off on the losing side of this, because that won't play well for his politics.
No, I don't believe there's any pressure on Putin, you know, to make any concessions here, because his country is behind him, whether it's by force or by through coercion. You know, Russians are supporting their president, and you know, it's Russian historical fact that they use their people as natural resource. So it doesn't matter how many of them die. The thing about Zelensky, you know, at the end of the day, when Russia seized Crimea in 2014, and the world was caught with, you know, their pants around their ankles when little green men landed in Ukraine and basically seized all of these strategic objectives. What was happening in Donbas was actually a pack of gangsters who were supported by the, you know, the spy agency from Russia, FSB, etc., and GRU, who pretty much seized only civic leadership buildings, like, you know, town halls and police stations. So it wasn't like a popular uprising in Donbas where ethnic Russians rose up against, you know, Ukrainian tyrannical authorities. It was a straight up power grab with, you know, Ukraine not being ready to enforce their own laws on their own territory, while at the same time, you know, little green men were taking possession of a huge peninsula that actually President Trump correctly was talking about is very important in their hearts. So, and then from there, it just kind of grew into the insurgency until it just became all-out war from 2022. So Ukrainians still do not want to give up on Donbas because, again, these are not ethnic Russians. These are Ukrainians who speak Russian language. I mean, you see, in Georgia, 2008, one of the pretexts for Russia to attack Georgia is by issuing Russian passports to Georgian citizens who live in the province that Russia planned on seizing, which is one of their oldest tricks. You know, hey, give these Russian speakers Russian passports so we can say, hey, we're justified to enter because Russian citizens are under attack. So that's why I don't trust Putin at all. But I believe that President Trump speaks with a really big stick, and I hope he keeps it up. I love show of force in Alaska. And I hope President Trump continues projecting strength out there.
But there doesn't seem to be, in your view, is there any kind of win possibility here or peace agreement if that Donbas region is not handed over? Because that's what Putin wants. I mean, they have 76% control of a good portion of that, you know, area in eastern Ukraine. This is an area that I guess is very important for industry, and some of the heaviest fighting of the war has taken place there in the last few years. So,
well, I agree. Lots of minerals.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Because Western Ukraine is mostly like farmlands. But look, the way I see it is possibly Georgian resolution, where you still have several Georgian provinces, states, if you will, that are not part of Russian Federation, but are controlled by pro-Russian separatists. And ceasefire still holds, and everybody's making money, right? And because that's ultimately what I think President Trump wants to do, too. You know, we want to get back to economic prosperity because, you know, this war is really not good for a global economy. And so I believe once they freeze the conflict, just kind of have Russians claim victory in their capital, have Ukrainians claim victory in their capital, but as long as killing is stopped. And then Europeans really need to pay attention, make sure that Russian influence operations are not affecting Ukraine the way they have affected Georgia most recently, where they all but have a pro-Russian government in Tbilisi.
Amir, great stuff. I appreciate your insight here this afternoon. I think it's fascinating what happened yesterday, what happened Friday. We'll see if maybe this can progress in a positive direction. I think there's a little hope now, which is good.
But it's still just as clear as the mud, isn't it?
Yep, and it probably will be in a few weeks when we talk about it again. Take care, Amir.
Thank you so
much.
We'll
see. All right.
Get more at 971talk.com.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.